Hi, I'm Ryan McGranigan, an aerospace engineer, data scientist, and all-around art, design, engineering, and science enthusiast. And you're listening to Origins, the show where we talk with thought leaders across eclectic areas of society about their origin stories and trajectories. The purpose is to highlight these thought leaders across different landscapes, to learn about the pivotal moments in their lives and to illustrate the ways of living that help you actionably re-examine your own assumptions and patterns. To provide ideas and stories to give you pause, bring you excitement, and be origins of new trajectories.
The thing that I value the most is breathing, because I know how close I've been to not being able to do that on more than one occasion, and so I just try to take a moment and just pause and take a deep breath.
Thanks for joining another episode of Origins. Today we have a really special guest, Jose Cato, who I think has a voice that we all need to hear and sit with for a bit in these strange times. Just a reminder that you can get all of the show notes at originspodcast.co, including links to everything that Jose and I talk about. And for everyone out there struggling with the global pandemic, COVID-19, we're sending all of our love your way, and I hope that this conversation helps. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Jose Cato. I'm joined today by Jose Cato, someone who defies categorization but inspires at every turn. Jose grew up in a housing project in Worcester, Massachusetts, and throughout his childhood cultivated a desire to create that landed him at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He graduated there with a Master's of Fine Arts in Architecture. He then traded his home state in Massachusetts for that of his father's family, Louisiana, specifically finding a new home in New Orleans. After earning his master's degree in architecture at Tulane University, Jose embraced NOLA as his new home and has become a bedrock of the city, enriching it and its citizens through art, public works, and his passion for community empowerment. In the 9 years since arriving in New Orleans, Jose has filled roles across dimensions as diverse as education, design, and public works. A few of those include CEO and founder of his own t-shirt brand, Jointed Creativity, design director at the Arts Council of New Orleans, owner and founder of Jose Cato Creative, a photography and design practice, and a project manager at Tulane in the Albert and Tina Small Center for Collaborative Design. Jose embodies selflessness, leadership, and creative community everywhere he goes. He's one of the wisest people that I know and has a sensibility that I wish I and everyone shared. This conversation is about the development and continual evolution of that sensibility in a time when it could not be more important. Jose, thanks so much for joining us on Origins.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate the intro. I don't know if I've ever had like a real intro like that before. So
it's all stuff that I've been thinking about for a long time. So it's a pleasure to be talking with you.
Yeah.
So, Jose, I got to start it this way. You appreciate food more than almost anyone that I know. I got to know, give me the top two meals you've had, maybe recently, and why.
Oh, man. Recently. So, certainly, probably one would be my homie Charlie, who owns a place here in New Orleans called Free Thai, which has unfortunately seized operations temporarily because of all this. But just before they shut down the last day, I picked up some food from them.
Nice.
Got some rice and beans, some mac and cheese, some greens, some smothered greens that are like my favorite thing that he cooks. Some pink leaves, which is like a really spicy Haitian relish. It's like mango sauce. He just kind of loaded me up with all the staples. And so Andrea and I were, you know, for a few days, that's what we were living on. And I couldn't have been happier, honestly.
How's that?
And then, man, the other thing, honestly, I've had just like carrots and hummus. a few times, and it's just been so nice just to have like a moment to just like eat something really, really, really simple, and still be satisfied. You know, I think, you know, it's like a good, how easy it is to like, you know, be fulfilled with a meal, even if it's just like one or two ingredients. And so that's been really nice.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
So I want to look at your childhood growing up in Worcester, Massachusetts. I've read that you said you found yourself pulled between the streets and a desire to create.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about how you trace that and how you think about it now.
Man, that tension saved my life. You know, I think that's, if I had to distill it down to like, you know, a few words, you know, it's, I think that that's the, being in that tension of, you know, I grew up in Great Brook Valley, which is a small housing project in Worcester. And it was, you know, when I was growing up, it was pretty rough. You know, it was definitely, you know, you saw your fair share of drugs, guns, you know, violence. It's like, you know, I've been in rooms that have been shot up. You know, I've seen bodies. You know, I've been, you know, thrown on cop cars by police officers, and you know, like, and so it was very easy to gravitate towards a certain lifestyle, you know, and get caught up in that world of you know, the sort of, you know, this kind of classical image, if you will, of the quote unquote ghetto of America that we see today, right? But at the same time, I had cousins and friends and folks that were incredibly creative, you know, and so I saw a whole nother world of existence that in almost every way kind of contradicted everything about the other world, you know? And so for me, that, you know, being in that tension and kind of understanding those two worlds, like that's something that, you know, I think that that's a place that I've tried to operate from, since I was young, kind of understanding that, you know, I'm not too far from that reality over here. But I can also see, you know, the brilliance and the amazing beauty that exists in this space. You know, and I take that, and for me, it was a very literal thing, right? It was like, you know, if I hung out with these people, it would, or am I going to hang out with these people, right? And, you know, and sometimes those groups were intertwined, right? And so you were really straddling both sides. And so, yeah, it was an interesting, you know, I think that was like an interesting space just to be in. And, you know, I went to a magnet school when I was a kid. I went to the school that was just outside of the housing project. Was called the Starts Magnet. And we were exposed to a lot of different things. You know, I was exposed to music, to dance, to creative writing, to theater, drama, right? We had art classes. And so my entire childhood, you know, I grew up knowing possibilities, you know, and knowing that people themselves create things. And so, you know, I think that always gave me, a different perspective, you know, than a lot of the folks that I grew up with, because not all of my close friends, you know, necessarily went to the same elementary school as me. You know, a lot of them went to some of the other schools. The school that I went to, you know, there was a good amount of people from my neighborhood, but there was also, you know, a lot of middle class and upper class families as well, right? And so it was an interesting kind of environment to move in. And so I think that I think just like being around arts a lot, you know, always reminded me that, you know, that there was always another reality that could be made.
Yeah, you talked about that the tension saved your life. And it's really interesting to me because I feel like a lot of people try and avoid that tension because it's uncomfortable. I'm curious. I mean, it sounds like, is it something that because of that background you've tried to embrace in your life? And how do you embrace tension? How do you try and sit with that discomfort that it brings?
Yeah, I think for me, like, you know, I think about it sort of visually, right? Like, I'm sort of, if for me, tension is the middle point in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. right? It's like that moment right in the middle where it's like, I know I could be over here, but I know I could be here. And I think everything that I do, I'm always trying to do it in a way that allows me to maintain balance in the present. Whether it's, something as simple as like, what do I want to eat for lunch today? Or, do I want to take this job in another city? It's like, what's the thing that allows me to maintain the most balance? Not necessarily, stability necessarily, but like, that allows me to sort of stay in my stride, right?
Yeah.
And kind of keep moving at the pace that feels most fulfilling and productive in the moment. And so for me, it's like that, the tension, like being able to live in that tension or finding comfort in that tension is just, in a lot of ways, accepting that, I am where I am right now, but I know that there's more. And there's also a lot that has happened that can still be celebrated. And so I don't know, I try not to overthink like where I am in terms of whatever journey I'm on. It's like, I know that there are things that, I know I'm moving towards somewhere, right? And right now is on the path. And so I'm not worried about it.
Hmm.
I think that tension is like, in a lot of ways, it kind of keeps me grounded, it's like I said, it's a reminder of like, being in this moment, and being able to be still, for even just for a split second to know like, oh man, like, yeah, I know that there's still this much more to go, but, take a moment and look back and realize like, how far it's, and how long it's been just to get here.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned being exposed to creative writing at the Magnet School, and you hear a lot of poets talk about how poetry is something complex enough to hold the tension of human experience. And I think that kind of resonates with me as you were talking. And is that what originally, is that how you would trace your in background with poetry, or how did you get involved in develop a love of poetry?
The first like real like poetry stuff that I can like really remember, honestly, was just like Where the Sidewalk Ends, Falling Up. Like that was like, being in the environment that I was in, those books were portals to, other worlds. I could resonate with, those words in a lot of ways, even though I knew that, that author certainly didn't come from my neighborhood, right? I didn't know anybody from my neighborhood that had books at the library, And so it was, I think that was probably my earliest like introduction. Over time, like, I've just growing up in the 90s, early 2000s, like, being heavily surrounded and influenced by hip hop, being from the Northeast, having family that lived in the Bronx, and, going to New York as a kid, during the summer or school breaks and things like that. I was always sort of around culture and around words in that sense, right? Like, I was a big like Nas fan, growing up and as a kid, and had like in middle school, I would like intentionally walk to school, often, in part because I was messing around and I wasn't that focused on the school, but also, it gave me time to listen to albums. know. And I remember just like putting on one CD and like I would listen to that CD for the whole week, you know. And so I don't know. I developed a love for how people were able to communicate narratives, and I don't know. Maybe subconsciously, part of it was just like I wasn't seeing a lot of people talking about their narratives in my environment. You know, like you know, a lot of us were. You know, we weren't. We were just there in a lot of ways, and nobody was necessarily like trying to tell their story per se, right? And so I just kind of gravitated towards that a little bit, in you know, in terms of like really sitting with lyrics and you know, writing them down, and you know, me and my friends used to play around like early like Fruity Loop days, right, when like we still get off of like Huzzah and like things like, you know, dating myself a little bit, right? But you know, those like early days, you know, making, you know, silly, like trying to make like songs that, you know, at that time, this was like, you know, this is like pre-YouTube days, right? It's like nobody was really like even, there was no way for us to put stuff out. We were just doing it because we were just like having fun. And then as I grew older, I started to, you know, there were moments where I would find myself sitting writing, you know, and just taking in a lot of poetry. For some reason, that just was a medium that I could plug into really easily. Hmm.
And you ultimately chose a different creative path with architecture. What drew you to architecture?
The thing that drew me to architecture was my hate for upper level math classes. honestly, I went to a technical high school in Worcester Tech. When I was there, it was Worcester Vocational High School, and I took carpentry while I was there. And so, you know, it's a trade school. So, you know, there were, once you're a junior or senior, basically every other week you have classes, and you alternate, you know, classes 1 week and then your trade, the next week. And my senior year, I got a chance to go work at a custom cabinetry place, called Woodmeister. It's a small, was a pretty small business that started in Worcester, and then they kind of, you know, got bigger, moved just outside the city. You know, those folks were like doing these $10 million houses, $15 million houses in like Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, Cape Cod. And I started to see, like, I was doing all this carpentry stuff in high school, but I started to see this other side of that world, you know, where it's like, yeah, some people are like building and making it, but you know, like we're over here in the shop doing this hard work, and like there's a guy in the office, like, you know, on CAD, doing some other stuff that, and probably making more money, you know? but it just exposed me to that world. You know, I didn't really know what architecture could be necessarily, or like what it looked like as a profession, because I didn't know any architects. There were no architects in my neighborhood. You know, I had some familiarity with it, coming out of high school. It was kind of like my second choice and my backup choice when I was applying to schools in terms of majors. But I originally went to UMass as a math major. You know, I thought I wanted to teach high school math. I had a high school math teacher, Linda Kaufman, who is still teaching to this day. She teaches at the community college now. I just heard from her a few months ago.
Cool.
She was like the first person to ever like really challenge me and kind of stand up and be like, you know, you got to check yourself a little bit. And I remember showing up to her class, when I was like a sophomore, you know, showed up to her class late. I was like in the hallway, goofing around, whatever. And at the end of the class, she kind of came up to me and was just like, you're not coming late to my class again. You know, just kind of, I was just like, what? Like, who is this lady? Like, you know, this is tiny lady, like, who are you? You don't know me. You don't know anything about my life, where I come from, how, you know, but I, you know, on top of that, like the very last, I was like, oh, dang. She like, you know, she really like took a moment to try to engage in a certain way, you know? And she was great. Like she was instrumental throughout my time in high school. And so I thought, you know, I thought I wanted to be that. I thought that was, you know, the thing that I was kind of destined for. And then once I got into like upper level calculus classes, like multivariable calculus and stuff, and like, you know, I was just like, I was like, the kids that I want to work with, like, you know, the people that were going to my high school, you know, the people that grew up in my neighborhood, like, I was like, they're not going to ever learn this in high school. Right. And for me, I was like, I want to learn more about pedagogy, you know, and like how you actually teach and, you know, develop curriculum and like really engage and like do all that, you know, and I was operating on the mindset, just like, you know, teach me that and just teach me the math that I need to know. You know, it's like, I understand conceptually why it's important to know these concepts, in the context of a major, but, you know, I was like, I want to study math because I want to teach it, not because I want to be a mathematician. And so sophomore year, I was just like, I was kind of fed up with it. I was like, you know, I remember being in my dorm room looking outside and like seeing people at the basketball court, just like having fun, hanging out. I was in my room doing like problem sets. And I was like, man, like this isn't it. Like, you know, I'm like, I have a moment to experience college in a way that I won't ever get it. And I know that if I stay in this major, like I can grind it out, but I'm not going to have the experience that I want, you know? And so I made the decision to switch, and you know, I called my pops up. He was at the time was, doing a interior design degree. And so I was like, yo, I want to switch my major. It's kind of crazy. It's like, you know, the middle of sophomore or the first semester of sophomore year. He's like, I was like, what do you think? You know, he's like, you know, whatever you feel in your gut, whatever you feel in your heart, like, you know, do that. Like, it doesn't matter what you choose. Like, regardless, you know, the way that you move is going to get you where you need to get. You know, that was essentially his, you know, what he told me. And, you know, I was like, all right, I went back, went to my advisors. And I was just like, you know, this math thing isn't working out. It's not going to be a pleasant experience. So, you know, what else can I do? And I knew that architecture was, like I said, it was something that I had been thinking about. And at the time, I was like really missing, you know, the ability to create, you know, and make things. You know, I had just come off of 4 years in high school where I was like making things regularly in carpentry. You know, and like was able to sort of express myself in that way. And then, you know, this first year and a half of college was just like, I wasn't really, you know, I would write here and there. You know, I wasn't really like engaging and creating a whole lot. And so I was kind of missing that a little bit as well. And so I switched sophomore year and then ended up starting the architecture program in the spring of sophomore year, and had to like double up on a bunch of, you know, art studio classes and stuff, because basically I had to make up a year. Yeah, it was a grind of a semester, but it was fun. It was like, you know, for a while, you know, that was the first time that I had to just like really dive into, you know, creative pursuits and just get ideas out and just like, you know, put things out, see people engage with it and react with it. And, yeah, it was cool just to like be able to fully dive into it.
But I mean, it's interesting because I know that you've had such varied experiences, and you've taken your architecture background and kind of infuse that in a number of different ways. And I know that one of the things that you're most passionate about is community empowerment. So you've brought kind of a human element to architecture and design. And a mantra of yours that I'm aware of is create, inspire, and support. And I'm curious how it's guided you in what you've done since your degree in architecture and what you decided to get involved in.
Yeah, for sure. So the other piece about architecture, which I know now just because I've had many, many years to like reflect, is that when I was younger, growing up in Grave Valley, I remember walking to my aunt's house one day and you know, I was walking past the basketball court and I paused and I was like, just kind of looking around. And it was like maybe the first time that I actually stopped to like take in the environment, you know, and I noticed, I was like, oh man, like, you know, this family's lived over here for, you know, a few generations. This family's been here for, you know, X amount of generations. You know, their people live over here. You know, and I was in the same boat, you know, like my, a lot of my family lived in that housing project, and still does, you know, that's my entire life. But that was the first moment where I started to question or wonder, I think, like, what is it about the physical environment that is restricting people from being able to lead? Because I've seen that there's, you know, other places outside of this. You know, I went to elementary school and middle school with a pretty diverse crowd and certainly wealthier people. And so I was exposed to a certain way of living, even if I wasn't necessarily in it myself. And so that was like the first moment that I think I started thinking about it. And so for me, once I got into architecture, you know, it was really important to figure out a way to tie it back to people, because I knew how unaware I was of architecture, you know? And so, you know, now I think about it all the time. You know, I think about space all the time. I think about, you know, cities, our environments, all this stuff. It's impossible for me to kind of turn it off. But it's because I'm in it all the time. You know, it's like I've studied this thing. You know, I spent 6 years in school, right? Like, just like focused on this one topic. And so, I understand it in a way that a lot of people don't. Because a lot of us just move through it, you know. We don't really know why, you know, why the sidewalk is this wide or this wide. We just know that it's a sidewalk, right? So, you know, why some buildings feel more welcoming and some feel more threatening or harsher. You know, it's like these are intentional things, right? That, you know, decisions that are being made about communicating ideas, about communicating messages and beliefs and perspectives, right? But most people don't. And so I knew that I had to always try to find ways to engage people in the process simply as a means of educating more people about the built environment. You know, like just to make them a little bit more aware, you know, where it's like, if you're walking down the street and you see something, you know, if you see a giant building that looks out of scale or, you know, doesn't feel right, you know, in that environment, you can call the, you know, your planning commission, your city council, and be like, hey, what's the policy? What's the ordinance in my neighborhood? You know, what are the regulations for building heights, right? And so there's a lot about just how our built environment is created that, you know, most people don't know, right? Like, there's a lot about the process that I still don't know, and I've been in it, you know, I've been engaging the topic for a decade now, right? And so I think that was the thing that really you know, kind of pushed me towards architecture and trying to study the topic more, which is like, I just wanted to understand more of why certain environments existed and why certain decisions were being made, so that, you know, I could then, one, communicate with folks that are on the ground and actually living through these, you know, living in these environments, so that they understand it and can advocate for themselves. And also, you know, so that I can find opportunities to also engage the practice, you know, and hopefully be able to do projects that are a little bit more equitable, a little bit more just, you know, a little bit more honest, in terms of what's needed, in that time, in that moment. And so, yeah, communities for me is, you know, like community was everything for me growing up. You know, it was, it's the reason I am where I am, you know, it was the people that were around me that built me in a lot of ways. You know, and I think that oftentimes, like those of us that are in positions that are making decisions, that impact communities, like we forget just how important it is to really be mindful of what it is that's actually happening there. You know?
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think often I'm interested about this aspect of helping people become more aware of their surroundings or just of the moment itself. But, you know, sometimes when you give people that advice, it often falls on deaf ears. What do you tell people specifically that helps them better embrace that idea? You teach, so maybe what do you tell your students?
Yeah, I mean, I think even more simply, right, is the reality that everything is designed. You know, everything that we introduce to the world is designed. Right? Everything that we use is designed. You know, your toothbrush was designed by somebody. You know, your car was designed by somebody, right? The way that you move through a building was designed by somebody, right? Like somebody wanted you to walk along this corridor on this side, you know, so that you can see this northern light, you know, get this nice northern light instead of walking on an exposed southern facade, right? Like these are decisions that people are making for everything, right? And so I think just trying to communicate to people that, you know, everything around us that we use, like people had a hand in making that. And somebody thought about how it looks, how it feels, how it resonates, what it communicates. And architecture is no different. You know, architecture just happens to happen on a larger scale and on a different timetable. You know, it's not the same as, you know, designing and developing, you know, a mouse or, you know, a keyboard, right? It's like, it happens at a different scale, a different place, you know, it impacts people differently, because all of us have to deal with it and navigate it, you know, like the public, but the entire public has to engage with it in some way, shape or form, right? Whether, you know, whether it's a public space or building or not, you know, like there's still, it's visible in a very real way in the way that we, the ways that we live. And so, you know, I think, you know, I try to encourage people to just take a moment to like step outside their own body, you know, if you will, and really take stock in how it is that you physically move through space. You know, like when you're walking down your neighborhood, you know, what is that experience? What is that experience feel like, but also what is it communicating in terms of how everything is organized? You know, what is it, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I give the example of New Orleans, you know, where it's like, you know, we understand that, you know, again, like architecture doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? It's happening in real time with society, right? And so it reflects that, right? And so, you know, what does it say when you cross, you know, St. Charles into the Garden District and, you know, the sidewalks are lined with trees and, you know, it's very manicured and all the lights work, right? And then you cross the same street, St. Charles on the Central City side and sidewalks are broken up and street lights don't work, right? Or, you know, maybe sidewalks don't even exist, right? Like those, the built environment that we live in a lot of ways is a physical reflection and manifestation of the social environment that we exist in. You know, and so all that to say is all of us play a role, right? in terms of shaping that, right? By our actions, by our decisions, by the way that we engage, and so I think it's important for us to be aware of space, you know, because space is where all of this stuff happens, you know, which is interesting now that I say that out loud to you, because you know, I'm sure space in a very different way.
It's the scales you're talking about, though. I mean, it's the importance of awareness of those scales. We were talking before we even started about this project you're working on right now, about how to allow people in New Orleans to have a different interaction with water. And you were talking about this area, Bayou St. John in New Orleans, being a different scale of interaction with water. You know, you say, I think the words you used were, it's a human level scale of that. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's very interesting to me, because it kind of is this theme I feel like you and I have talked about across a lot of the things that we're both passionate about, poetry and things like that. How do you bring things to a human level scale, and how do you humanize things? I think a lot of the things you're passionate about are ways of doing that, whether it's architecture or public work design, or poetry even. And another aspect of that you're heavily involved in and you've been passionate about your whole life is photography. And so is that something that you think often about, consciously, about bringing things into a different scale?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think when I'm working on specific photo stories, you know, like if I'm doing a specific shoot or photographing, you know, a particular place, like I certainly pay attention to the various levels of detail, you know. Sometimes, you know, for example, there's a church just a few buildings down from not the end of our block here, they've been renovating it recently, and it wasn't until one day when I was walking by where I like noticed just how beautiful the detail between the brick porch and the railing was, you know. And it's like, you know, I had to pause and just kind of look at that, you know. But I had already taken in sort of and had already appreciated the beauty of the full building, you know. But you know, you can always get more granular, right? And find more of that, like find more of the beautiful things, right? And so I think in that sense, yeah, I'm always thinking about it. You know, I'm always aware of how people are moving in space, you know, and obviously, you know, having a background in architecture, like I understand, I can walk into a room and kind of almost immediately, like really get a good sense of kind of what the energy is going to feel like, in part just because of how the space is laid out or designed, you know. You know, if it's lower ceilings or higher ceilings, you know, people are, you know, whatever it is, right? Like there are various things that are present that inform kind of the way that I'm kind of editing out in my head, right? Like what should I pay attention to, you know? And so, yes, yeah, it's interesting in terms of being able to like zoom out and look at stuff at various scales. You know, I've had a drone for quite some time, and I haven't quite figured out the best way to utilize it. I think I have some images that I'm like, you know, that I'm proud of, that I really like, but you know, the thing that I really want to get to, the point that I really want to get to, is showing the degree of that scale in one sort of coherent body of work. You know, so I have some ideas for that, you know, like, you know, looking at a specific neighborhood, for example, you know, sort of documenting it from an aerial perspective, kind of showing the relationships that exist there, but then being able to zoom in on that neighborhood and kind of see it from various heights, you know, see it on the ground from the perspective of the people that are there, right? So that you really get a sense of you know, the full kind of essence of a place, you know, where you could understand it sort of for its architecture and the way that it's laid out and how it sort of relates to other parts of the city, but also the way that, you know, the smaller elements of that, you know, the buildings, the sidewalks, you know, the people, right? How those things start to sort of interact with one another. And I think, you know, I think for me at the end of the day, a lot of it is just trying to get back to this, you know, the simple idea that, like, man, all of this stuff is connected in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's very easy for us to forget about that sometimes, you know, which is something that we're being reminded of right now in this moment. You know, the interconnectivity of it all.
Yeah, I'd love to do a project with you at some point that focuses on this scale, you know, talking about images of the Earth taken from space and then zooming all the way down to something really, really close up, like a photo that you've taken. It'd be a really cool thing to talk about.
That would be amazing.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I have actually, man, I have a good homie who goes by I Make Bad Beats out in Memphis, who's an unbelievable genius. Is the word that comes to mind. He's just like brilliant in a lot of, in every aspect. But I've been wanting to, you know, I sent him a message. We had a conversation a while back at this fellowship that we were at together in Salzburg. And, you know, something that he had said had resonated, and I had made some notes and recently came across it. But I really want to try to do something with him in Memphis that sort of speaks to like those varying degrees and scale, because you know, I just think that the work that they're doing is very grounded in a specific neighborhood in Memphis, and it's just kind of really like I think him and his folks would be like a good would be the perfect like collaborator. So yeah, certainly that's I'll keep you posted on how that develops. And maybe we can, you know, figure out a way to zoom out even further from there.
I would love that. Thanks, Jose. So you, I mean, anyone that listens to you or talks to you for any amount of time kind of recognizes you have just this amazing perspective. And it can almost, I mean, like, I think you have this amazing sense of presence that can almost be intimidating to some people that have trouble finding that, you know, but it can't always come easy. I'm curious about the times when it's a struggle for you to find that presence. Do you have a process for regaining lost focus or finding presence?
Yeah, somebody, I'm trying to remember who it was, a friend recently like asked something along these lines on Instagram, and I had commented by taking long breaths. You know, I think I've, the thing that I value the most, is breathing. Because I know how close I've been to not being able to do that, on more than one occasion. And so I just try to take a moment and just pause and take a deep breath. And usually what I do is I try to inhale for as slow and as long as I can, and then hold my breath and try to, you know, try to time it so that it's sort of the same length, and then exhale as slow as possible. And just really, really taking a moment to slow that, you know, slow my breath down as much as possible. To remember, you know, like, man, this is the fact that all of us do that on a day-to-day basis is amazing. You know, everything that it takes for you to be able to breathe is incredible, right? And so by simply breathing, you're already doing something amazing every single day, right? And so for me, like, that's a reminder to just, like, you know, honestly, just be really, really humble, you know, and really, really thankful and grateful for existing in the moment that I'm in, because I know how easy and how fragile, you know, this thing called life is, right? You know, moments like this remind us, you know, I try to think about, you know, in my world, it's like there's a pandemic almost every day, you know, in the sense that, like, you know, I try to make a point to always remind myself that, you know, I know 100% that there's not even somebody just across the world that's hurting more than I am, or struggling more than I am, or in a harder position. Like, there's somebody down the street, you know, or maybe somebody next door. And so, yeah, that's like, that's not the, it's not a super, super like research or like method. It's just like, I don't know, there's no, it's a pretty simple thing, I know, but I think it's the thing that maybe everybody takes for granted the most, you know?
Yeah. That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing, Jose. And it's, I think it's important for everyone to kind of sit with that for a bit, especially now. We're recording this on March 25th of 2020, and obviously we're in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic. So I think it's important words for everyone. And thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think, you know, it's, yeah, it's an interesting thing, man, because, you know, a lot of, I think, you know, to kind of bring it back to space a little, you know, like built environments, you know, a lot of, you know, growing up in a housing project, right? Like, a lot of housing projects were designed, you know, to be very sort of harsh environments. You know, like, they're, you know, they, I think for a lot of people, they hardened them, you know, to the point, to a point where it's easy to become numb. You know, and I think maybe the thing that I, you know, thinking back on it right now, you know, maybe the thing that, you know, having access to certain touch points outside of that environment, you know, and being able to always be reminded that there was more than just that, you know, created a certain, you know, certain level of awareness and, you know, I think a lot of people in those environments, like, really, really appreciate breath, because it's so easy for, you know, you see it often. It's like death. Yeah. Death is not something that is foreign. You know? It's like, I remember when I was very, very young, you know, like, there was a taxi driver that was shot and killed right in front of my house, right? And, you know, it's, so a lot of people see that. And so, you know, I think it's unfortunate that we have to sort of have those environments to be reminded of that. But I think that that's why you see so much like spirit and fight, you know, coming from those environments. It's because, you know, people just appreciate life so much. So that was just a random thought that popped in.
Yeah. I have so many questions and things that I would love to talk to you about, but running a little short on time, so I want to maybe move on to the last part of the show, if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So we end these shows with just a quick lightning round, is what we call it. Just a set of four questions, meant to be short and illustrative of your origins. So Jose, you ready for the lightning round?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. Question number one. What is one book that you feel has impacted you unlike anyone else? And what book do you have a special relationship to?
Oh, man. Like I said, Shel Silverstein, man, Falling Up and Where the Sidewalk Ends, those books, it's just classics, man. I think if you pick those up as an adult, you just still find a lot of gems in there.
Oh, well said. Okay, second question. What passion outside of your own field has most importantly helped set your trajectory?
Man, I think, you know, the seeing a lot of people in my environment really grind out in the social work world. Mm. You know, I knew people that, you know, one of my aunts works at the Y in Worcester. You know, my pops started the first youth center in Worcester. You know, I knew people that were big into community work in like real grassroots ways. And that's something that I've always admired and knew that if I came from that perspective, in all the work that I did, that I could actually reach people because I saw people do it, you know.
The third question, what's making your heart sing right now? What's intriguing you at the moment?
Man, I just sent a friend a link to a bunch of work that I've had, you know, some masks and some texts, like, you know, poetry or writing, but it's a series of 100 and tail end of 2019, she just sent me some words that were like really encouraging and validating. And I'm just really excited to like share that, put that out into the world, you know, in the coming days, and just kind of see how people react to it. And hopefully people will be able to find some nice healing words and sentiments in there during this time.
Oh, I can't wait to see that. Can you say it again? Just, it cut out just for a minute, so I guess we missed a little bit of the substance of that.
Yeah, so a friend of mine, I sent her a link to this series of drawings that I've been working on, and this particular set was a set of 101 drawings that I did from 2018 to the end of 2019, and I've been kind of sitting on it because I wasn't really sure kind of what the work was worth, if you will. I sent it to my friend, and she just sent back some like really powerful and validating words. And it just kind of gave me like, I sort of felt the lightness in my breath. And you know, I'm really excited to just like be able to just like put it out there, like just kind of let these go. And hopefully they'll be able to kind of, you know, bring some peace to folks during these times and kind of, you know, lift people's spirits. It's a series called Ancestors, which, you know, for me sort of are the drawings are sort of like almost like little vignettes of kind of messages or narratives, if you will, that I feel like I'm getting from folks that, you know, folks that have been here before me that sort of paved the way.
We'll certainly put a link to those into wherever they'll be able to find them in the show notes as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think I might even just put out a Dropbox link and just keep it simple. You know, like just let folks download these to their phone or just kind of, you know, like I just want them to be things that people can look at intentionally, you know, and visit. So
yeah. Can't wait to see those. It's just something that's been on my mind lately that I wanted to offer here is just, sometimes the most empowering thing can be someone else's vision for you. And, it's really cool to hear that when you send that to your friend, it was almost her words and her vision for you that kind of empowered you to do that. I'm always passionate and curious about the way people are finding that encouragement in others. So thanks.
Yeah.
And so the final lightning round question, what is one thing you have changed your mind about lately?
Think how much I need. Yeah, how much I need. I think I, you know, this, particularly being in this moment, but even sort of leading up to it, you know, I think I've been marinating on, you know, what is it that I use, you know, and like trying to take inventory, like, not just in terms of like physical things, you know, but you know, I keep coming back to this, to this quote, I'm not sure where it comes from, but, you know, the fastest way to have more is to need less. And so I've been trying to sit with that. And I think that for me, it's been good to just like embrace the idea of not needing to have more.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Jose, this has been incredible. Thanks so much for making the time. And before we hop off here, do you have any parting messages or where do you want to send people?
Ooh, Man, I'm honestly, I don't even know. Let's see. I mean, I would love to send everyone within. Honestly, I think, you know, this is a moment. You know, as trying as it is, I think it's a moment for us to really take a look at who we are. Not in the sense of what we do, but who we are. You know, I had a friend of mine recently said, you know, they're like, we're human beings, not human doers.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I hope people find, you know, make intentional time to like really explore those depths, as, you know, as scary and as frightening, you know, as frightening as that could be. I think it's really, you know, I spend a lot of time reflecting and marinating and, you know, asking myself questions and, you know, that's the thing that's allowed me to really develop, honestly, like develop the sort of presence that I have, you know, because it's, you know, it's a way for me to just kind of burn, you know, like run through things, you know, and just kind of get things off of my chest, even if I'm not expressing it, you know, it's like I can explore these thoughts and ideas and get a better sense of what it is that I'm actually, not just wanting to do, but, you know, what is the thing that's meant for me, to do, you know? And I think, you know, I think if more folks do that, you know, take this moment to do that, like, we'll certainly come out of this on the other side on a much brighter and rooted and grounded place. Hmm.
Thanks, Jose. And I just want to point people, we'll put links to all these things in the show notes so people can find your architecture and your public works and your photography. But you're one of the most amazing Instagram followers. So I'd encourage everyone to follow JC Cotto, C-O-T-T-O on Instagram. You can see a lot of Jose's photography, a lot of his community, a lot of his poetry. And I think you can actually even see some of the ancestors' work that you've mentioned here. So point people there for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a few there in my stories. And I'm not someone that's on social media a lot, but when folks engage, I make a point to engage. So, you know, feel free, like use the social part of it as well as the media part of it.
Well, Jose, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to be on Origins.
Yeah, thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Much love.
That's it for another episode of Origins. Just a reminder that if you're enjoying the show and if you want other people to discover it or share it, leave us a note or a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people discover the show. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.